live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on location. Today, we're going to talk about health and nutrition and how something as simple as a muesli, M-U-E-S-L-I, that's a cereal common in Scandinavian countries, can help against arthritis, plus a lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to hear about fluoride. Now, it was over 40 years ago that I wrote an article, and every 6 months we update the article. It was called The Fluoride Fiasco. It is completely scientifically based. In fact, at the time, I was asked by a small community out in California that had fluoridated water. They did not want it. Could I write a paper that they could use before their town council to try to get fluoride out of the water supply? So keeping in mind that there would be probably some science advocates, maybe a dentist on their local board who would be pro-fluoride, I went overboard in loading it up with really good science supporting why fluoride is a fraud. It is a toxicant. It is dangerous. It is an industrial effluent. We shouldn't be using it. And also, it doesn't prevent tooth decay. In any case, we should never be taking it in as a mouthwash or as a supplement or in toothpaste. And it worked. Over the next 10 years that I monitored, about 100-plus communities in the United States were able to defluoridate their water, and many used the article. In fact, I was in constant communication with people who were writing me about the success they were having. And then I just went on. It was there, and I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. Well, now there's a whole new anti-fluoride movement worldwide. So we are updating the article. But today's advocate is not a dentist, not a scientist, not a public health advocate. I think you'll be surprised by who is saying why we shouldn't be using fluoride, and he is correct. To make sure you see that he is correct, after you hear him, go to Progressive Radio Network website or PRN.fm and read the article. I posted it there. And you think, wow, it's accurate. We shouldn't be using fluoride. Just a public health process. Then we're going to share a couple short commentaries, one by Chris Hedges and one that I've written concerning the S-hole countries of the world, the ones that Trump condemned. Well, maybe he ought to spend some time looking at America before he looks at the squalor and the deprived environments that people are living in. But it's not the people who should be condemned or attacked. That's racist. It's inhumane. Yeah, these are terrible environments, but they didn't make it this way. We did. So today, my commentary on how we made much of the world into S-hole countries. Also today, we will have part one of William Binney. He was one of the architects sitting at the table creating the National Security Agency and its systems to spy on us. So who better than someone who created the spying system to talk about what's wrong with it and how after he retired, he has now been an advocate against it. But wait till you hear what he has to say. You have not heard this before. This is new information, and it is scary. Also, recently I made a comment about artificial intelligence and robotics and how they would get to us. And one of the ways they'll get to us and convince us that we should be using it is through porn, virtual porn, where you're actually in the movie. You're no longer a quiet little spectator sitting at your computer where no one's seeing you and fantasizing, but you're actually in it. And of course, they know all this because they're creating a system. So now they have everything they need in order to blackmail you. But beyond that, guess who is the largest viewers of porn today? Women. And guess who buys more sex toys? Women. And guess what the brand new now, not in the future, sexual robots that look human? No, they're not women. They're men for women, which means that a woman can select the man, what size man she wants, a man who does not in any way cause any problems. So imagine how well they could sell that and who would be likely to want that. And you program it, and it's programmed automatically then to know all of your needs, to sense your emotions, to respond to them, to sense how you need to be pleased, to respond to it, and it has a mind of its own. What could possibly go wrong with that? And that's here now. You haven't heard about it, but they've been developing it. It's not one of these clunky little robots. It doesn't look like a blow-up doll. It looks completely human. So I'll talk about that. We always begin with health and healing, and we begin with a University of Erlangen in Germany. Now, it's well known that healthy eating increases a general sense of well-being. That's just common sense. But researchers at the Friedrich Alexander University in Germany have now discovered that a fiber-rich diet, there's your vegan diet, have a positive influence on chronic inflammatory joint disease. That leads to stronger bones. So you turn off the pain from arthritis, you turn on the healing, and you also have better intestinal health. Now, the intestinal bacteria is something that we talk about a lot here. This is the key to the effect that diet has on health. In very simple sentence, healthy intestinal flora consists of a multitude of species of bacteria, hundreds of different bacteria. Every adult carries approximately 2 kilograms, and a kilogram is 2.2 pounds, so you're carrying a lot of bacteria. But these are benign. These are not harmful. These are good bacteria. And those can be absorbed into the body from the components of our diet. And a byproduct of this process are short-chain fatty acids that provide energy and stimulate intestinal movement, peristalsis, and have anti-inflammatory effects. So just by eating healthy, like oatmeal, millet, brown rice, quinoa, you're able to have healthy bacteria, stimulate peristalsis, have more rapid and healthier bowel movements, cleanse the intestine because you've got good bacteria, and also create a better pH in the body. You turn off inflammation. How about all that? And yet here they had it all along because the muesli that they start their days with, or more of the hearty whole grain cereals, this is a medium that allows bacteria to coexist harmoniously, and they can protect the intestinal wall and prevent it from letting pathogen pass through. So in the latest article published in Nature Communications, researchers show that it is not the intestinal bacteria themselves, but rather the metabolites that affect the immune system, and therefore having a knock-on effect on autoimmune disease, such as rheumatoid arthritis. And how intestinal bacteria and the immune system communicate is still not clear. We know it does communicate, we just don't know how. And the researchers focused on short-chain fatty acids proportionate to butyrate, which are formed during the fermentation process caused by intestinal bacteria. And these fatty acids can be found in the joint fluid, and it's assumed that they have an important effect on functionality of all of our joints. So the good short-chain fatty acids from the good food and the high-fiber food turned off pain in our joints, gave us a healthier overall immune system. But also in life, every action begets a reaction that's present but may not be engaged. Meaning, when I wake up in the morning, I could choose to lounge around, or I could choose to do something different. I could choose to go for a run. I could choose to work out in the gym. I could choose to exercise. That's all important. It'll have an impact. Or I can choose to do nothing. That'll have an impact. One impact is a great impact. The other is a destructive impact. Which impact do we want? You're going to get one or the other. And that's what we have to understand. So just be conscious of this, that every action begets you a reaction. So when you don't do something, you're doing something negative. For example, if you don't eat a healthy diet, you're eating an unhealthy diet. If you don't exercise, you're not benefiting from exercise. If you don't deal with stress, like mindful meditation or yoga, it's all to the destruction. So be attentive to this. It makes a difference. So when you're eating bad bacteria, and where do you get the bad bacteria? Bad bacteria is from sugar, from soft drinks, from alcohol, from meat, dairy, fish, and fowl. Processed carbohydrates, pretzels, candies, potato chips. It's not that complicated, but it is important. By the way, Northwestern University did a simple study about dishwashers. Now, we assume that a dishwasher cleans your plates and cups and spoons, and most do. Depending upon what kind you get, they can go clear up to sterilizing. That's just under autoclaving. Autoclaving is what they use in a hospital to sterilize their scalpels and tools that they use in medical procedures, so there's no bacteria or viruses left that can infect someone. Your dishwasher, no. But here's what you're not aware of. Your dishwasher is not as sterile as you think. In fact, your dishwasher will get your plate spotless, but it's also teeming with bacteria and fungus. Now, these are microbes, from bacteria to viruses to fungi, and everywhere, including within and on the human body, we have these. So it's no surprise that a kitchen appliance would be hosting them. So do people need to worry about getting sick from their dishwashers? I believe not if they do a simple process. After you run your dishwasher and it's finished, simply take some alcohol, rubbing alcohol or hydrogen peroxide, either one, on a paper towel and wipe it down. Just wipe down the outer area. And then that kills off a lot of these pathogens that have been growing. Because remember, you got hot and cold and dry and wet. Perfect environment for microbes to proliferate. And they've measured these, and they're different qualities, and most are not pathogenic. And that's good. But there are some that are. And the most common type of fungus found in your dishwasher are Cryptococcus and Candida. And these can become opportunistic pathogens. So just do an extra little clean on them. It's that simple. This was published in the Journal of Applied Environmental Microbiology. And finally, energy drinks can negatively impact young people. This is in the University of Waterloo, which is in Canada. Over half of Canadian youth and young adults who have consumed energy drinks have experienced negative health effects as a result. And in a nationwide survey of Canadian youth, over half of those who have ever consumed an energy drink has reported experiencing adverse health, rapid heartbeat, nausea, and even seizures. And currently, Canadian legislation is meant to prohibit energy drinks from being marketed to children, and energy drinks are not recommended to be used by people participating in sporting activities. If you want to have some energy when you're exercising, have 8 ounces of beet juice and 8 ounces of coconut water. That is probably your best single one. Or beet juice and watermelon juice. Again, terrific electrolytes, but no caffeine, no artificial stimulants. And if you want to really kick it into high gear, about 100 milligrams of ginkgo biloba. So that way, stay away from the energy drinks. I'm Gary, and all that's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Let's now hear from a person who is wanting his congregation, his congregants, not to drink fluoride in the water, not to use it in toothpaste or mouthwashes, and certainly not for their children to go to a dentist and get fluoride applied topically, nor to take any fluoride in any supplement.
That is used in the production of sarin gas. Sodium fluoride is an inorganic chemical compound, a colorless solid. Fluoride is a poison. Toothpaste contains sodium fluoride with the claim to reduce cavities. Every time you drink from the tap fluorinated water, you're drinking some of the poison that they say will keep you from having cavities, but your children by the age of 6 and 7 and 8 have cavities. When I grew up, I never knew what a cavity was. There was no fluoridation of water at that time. Let's look at some of the facts about fluoride. Fluoride is a waste byproduct of the fertilizer and aluminum industry. And it's also a part two poison under the UK Poisons Act of 1972. Fluoride is one of the basic ingredients in both Prozac and sarin nerve gas. In an article by Maria Hoven posted on the website Livestrong.com, dated July 25th, 2013, she identifies foods containing this poison fluoride. She writes, fluoride toxicity can have adverse effects on your kidneys, and it can also cause skeletal fluorosis in adults. Children who consume high amounts of fluoride can suffer from dental fluorosis, which develops when you consume too much fluoride from birth to 8 years of age when your teeth are forming. She states some of the following foods that contain sodium fluoride: instant formula that you give your babies, juices and tea, soda, cereals, wine and beer. Another toxic chemical additive in foods is the diet sweetener aspartame. Aspartame is the sweetener used in all diet drinks. Aspartame is considered a carcinogenic, meaning it can and will and is producing cancers. Why should sodium fluoride be used or sent to a cosmetic firm? And that made me think. When you make cosmetics, some of these are perfumes, they're makeup, cologne, why would you put P. Diddy on a fragrance or Beyonce on a fragrance? Beyonce and P. Diddy have lines of fragrances. Madonna has fragrances. Others have fragrances who are popular, who are famous, who are loved. But what is in the chemistry? P. Diddy is not a chemist. Beyonce is not a chemist. They're beautiful people being used in a way that if these fragrances have this fluoride in it, this sodium fluoride, every time you spray it on yourself, you're smelling sweet, but it's going into your pores, it's going into your system, and over time, cancer develops in your body. Oh, my. So if the enemy is that clever that he can make chemicals to make you think you're eating chicken, when in fact it's chemistry, then what is being put in these fragrances with your favorite black person or white person using the fragrance?
That was Reverend Farrakhan. I support that he is telling his congregants that this is a dangerous chemical, and there are hundreds and hundreds of ministries in the United States that this message will get out to, and that's important. And he also has been out there challenging vaccines, and that is important. And also he challenges gas hydrofracking. He's challenged a lot of things on these issues. Separate and aside from whatever one may or may not subscribe to his particular religious belief, which is a separate issue. Where I would share a difference of opinion is that P. Diddy and Beyonce and Madonna, yes, they are attractive people. They have a large following, but no one is selling them anything. They are willing and complicit in exploiting their celebrity status to profit for themselves. And the last time I looked, that profit was massive, hundreds of millions of dollars each to those people. And what a person does with their money is their business. But if you're fortunate enough in life to be able to earn more than what you need for your own quality of life, then do not we have a moral responsibility to go into communities that can help, be helped, and use that money to help them? And shouldn't we, if we're going to put our name and reputation to something, shouldn't we do our homework? And if we personally don't want to be bothered with it, shouldn't we bring people in who know how to do research and do the research to ask, is this a good product? Is there anything in here that could harm the body? Because then we're being more responsible. But I have one problem with much of celebrity success today. It is my own personal experience, because I've counseled more than 3,000 very famous people, including members of royal families, monarchs, famous celebrities, and I've counseled about 65,000 regular people. And when you're counseling people, you have a conversation, and some of these counselings can go on for hours. And one of the things I'm always curious is when you became famous, and with that, more often than not, wealthy, what was your first inclination? What did you decide was important? What became your priorities? Because now we're looking to struggle to get ahead. Now, okay, we're ahead. What do we do now? rare was the person who said, now it gives me an opportunity to study where before I did not have the time nor resources. I now can learn what I did not know in areas that are important to me. I can use my position to better the lives of others. But if anything, celebrity gives you a chance to grow not just in what you're doing, but to grow as a human being. And I don't see that. I see so many celebrities becoming successful, and then they stop growing. It all becomes protecting what they have and letting the world know how unique they are and what they possess. And that's just my own subjective perspective. I'm concerned about the world we live in. I don't know about Donald Trump. I don't know about Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton. Or Barack Obama. I don't know if they've gone into ghettos and slums. I don't know if they spent time in those environments to see how people live. I have. And what I've seen is that people frequently live, not just a couple, not just a couple nations, but you could qualify by saying that around the world there are thousands of S-hole environments. An environment where you cannot drink the water, there is no sewage system, there is mass human pollution. Haiti's one good example. But it's not for all Haitians. In fact, if you're wealthy, you live up in the mountains. You live with beautiful views of the ocean in Port-au-Prince or wherever you are on the island. You have gated compounds. You have all the different varieties of foods that either are grown in Haiti for you and your family, but not for the average person, or you can bring in from the Dominican Republic, where they frequently have they own what they call plantations in Dominican Republic, or they can get produce from anywhere because they're wealthy. And they have parties, they socialize. If you live there, and that's where the NGOs live, and that's where their compounds are, it's a different story. But what if you're one of the millions of Haitians that have to live where every day there is no septic system in Port-au-Prince? None. They have latrines, and each night, late after everyone's gone to bed, there are people that will come in, thousands of men come in, and they take buckets, and they empty out these septic ponds and pools and ditches from the wealthy. And they throw that into areas that go in through the main canals that go through town. And this has gone on for decades. And so kids just think it's normal to live where you would faint from the smells. And they go out and play, and they're kids. They're poor. They have to play where they can. And they don't have the advantages of having three meals a day and good schools to go to and safe environments to play in. And they don't have that. So how in the world could you possibly condemn people? You can't, unless you are a person who, quite simply, you are unrequited in your spiritual and moral vibrations. You simply cannot vibrate at the level of a person suffering and see the higher value and the greater good in people. You're condemning the people as if they are the cause of their environment. Mr. President, they are not. Some of the greatest of souls, some of the most kind people you will meet in these S-hole environments. I do not think there are certain real events or policies that turn the United States into an S-hole country, but it is. But not if you don't want to find it. If you want to stay in the safe environs of gated communities, of which we have thousands in the United States, one gated community has over 3,000 homes in it, and the average home goes around $3 million. They have golf courses and man-made lakes and tennis. They're near the ocean. They can enjoy it. And not that they do not deserve that. A lot of people I've met have worked hard their whole life. They've been ethical and honorable. Most are small business people. And they just don't want the hassle. They want a place in the winter or bad weather to come to, or they want to retire because they've lived in the mean streets or the main streets, and that is not to be condemned. Then you have your super gated communities. You have your mansions, and where the property values are so high that unless you're a billionaire, you couldn't afford to live there. There are buildings in New York. They're called billionaire buildings. And there are art galleries that you can't bid on a painting unless you have at least $1 billion to $2 billion in disposable income. Recently, a painting, the most expensive painting in history, was alleged to be Leonardo da Vinci. Its provenance wasn't even determined. So it's not even proven a Leonardo da Vinci painting, and it went for $450 million. Now, when you add in the buyer's fee to the gallery, you're at $500 million, $500 million for a simple painting. It wasn't even that great a painting. And it turned out to be the crown prince. He's not yet the king. When his father dies, who's in his mid-80s and six, he'll be the crown prince. He's 33 years old, 32, of Saudi Arabia. In his country, there are people who are hungry, illiterate, and living under dire conditions. And yet, while he arrests other royals and confiscates their money, billions of dollars, he then buys the most expensive home in the world. Again, I thought it was a crappy designed home. They tore down the original one that was beautiful in France, and it's $350 million. It actually probably cost around $30 million. Everything else is just profit. And then he buys a $400 million yacht, the most expensive yacht in the world. Why? I mean, you're talking about almost $2 billion for objects that will lose their value so you can say that you own something no one else does in a world of overinflated and massive bubbles, including our own real estate bubble. I predict that our real estate bubble and our equity bubble and assets in Wall Street will crash within the next 2 years and we'll lose about $20 trillion. That means your 401ks that are going up now are going to plummet. That means your investments, which are ripe right now, are going to be role in bleeding when this is over. So we're really a country that has been controlled for the last 40 years because we have put people in power of all institutions, not just government, but all institutions who lack an evolved human development on moral and ethical principles. And that's what makes us so, so difficult to deal with. It's easier to change people than it is to change institutions. Paradigms don't change. Institutions don't change once they're established, and then they become sclerosed. Let's walk for the cure. Hold on a second. Can you show me a single person with AIDS you've cured? I've cured 12. You've cured zero. You've made $800 billion. I spent $2.5 million out of my own pocket to treat 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS over a 15-year period, and I got good results. Not a single person I work with died. Can you say the same for your toxic drugs? No. And yet you'll have the walk, and you'll get everyone's money, and the celebrities like Bono and these other boneheads will line up to give you money because they don't have to think. They get the publicity. They get to be honored for helping, and yet they never look at the results. We have stopped looking at the results of our actions 40 years ago. We want freedom, peace, and democracy around the world. Look at the results. We want to prevent crime. Look at the results. Look at the results of our war on drugs. These are the progenitors of a society in collapse. 40 years ago, the old fabric that held us as a society together started to unwind. Social cohesion was sacrificed to greed and insecurity. The Franklin Roosevelt's republic was basic. It was hard work, educate yourself, and earn a skill, and you'll be rewarded and enter the middle class. Except if you're a woman, or if you're black or a minority, then it's going to be worse. In some cases, Congress, the courts, churches, schools, and the media, and business-labor partnerships earlier upheld from 1945 to about 1975, upheld democratic institutions. Then they all slowly whittled away, not by any single cause, just a gradual decay due to a socially perverse collective psychology. In the past, these institutions had a kind of self-correcting mechanism, even when there was plenty of injustice in the past. That's all eroded today. The unjust Vietnam War was a means to cement the industrial-military complex into America's economic culture. And it has continued to snowball since then, with every GOP administration increasing defense funding and military buildup, but then the Clintons, who are extremely pro-war. They support every war they can, every military industrial complex effort. They're first in line. Sign me up. In 1970, under Nixon, we saw the real beginning of deindustrialization, the gutting of American jobs, flattening of average salaries and wages, financialization of the economy. The Gates, the Zuckerbergs, the Bezos are today's Henry Fords and Carnegies, as are the hedge fund manager Steve Cohen in today's J.P. Morgan. The first signs of institutionalized income inequality, the beginnings of information technology, floods of money into Washington. The United States started to become more entrepreneurial and less democratically bureaucratic until a shift occurred later, when political bureaucracy and private entrepreneurship were married. That was the basis of fascism in America. The rise of a political right and left, and the boom in evangelical religiosity. All of these simple systems continue to build steam during the decade ahead, and some, especially conservatives, blame it on the decline of family and marriage. But in Norway, marriage is near obsolete. It is all live-ins and partnerships outside of marriage. I would state that the most dramatic shift in American decline into this S-hole status during the Reagan years, the GOP took advantage of Carter's weakness and practicality as well when we were stuck in stagnation and inflation, which was not Carter's doing, and then Reagan's infusion of neoliberal idealism throughout many of our institutions. It was time when corporations consolidated their lobby power to defeat labor and unions and consumer protection bills that Ralph Nader was responsible for enacting, more than 270 pieces of legislation, more than any person in American legislative history, and he was never elected to office. Could you imagine if he would have been president? My goodness, a world at peace, no regime change, no flood of refugees, no 9/11, no industrial toxicants, no national security agencies, a living wage. Just imagine. But those people who thought they were brighter than everyone else, the liberal community, and those who knew that they were more corrupt than everyone else, the Republican community, and those who controlled both, smiling and saying, it doesn't matter, tweedledee, tweedledo, we own you, buddy. The oligarchy, the deep state, and the average person didn't know about this. All they knew is, wow, I had a job, now I don't. I used to be able to have enough money that we could go on vacation and didn't have debt, and now I can't pay for anything. Yes. Solomon Brothers, now defunct, created the first financial product called mortgage-backed securities. It led to the 2008 meltdown. It was a time when corporations consolidated their lobby power to defeat labor. And when California passed Proposition 13, it launched a tax revolt that spread throughout the nation, resulting in the erosion of public funding. California, which had the best school system, public school system in the nation, gradually collapsed and today is ranked in the 40s somewhere. The corrupt Hillary and Bill Clinton gang, America's most hip organized crime family, well, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, globalization became the favored rage, and free trade and free markets and one world economy, but rapidly hijacked by the largest banks, multinational corporations. They were right there to participate. They were part of that greed, me too. Oh, me too want to get in line? Me too want to hire the people you've had sex with and bring them in from Arkansas into public office when they've had no experience? Like Les Hubbell? Yeah, to become third person in this Department of Treasury? Oh, but wait, didn't he go to prison? Yeah. Oh, wasn't he hired after he got out of prison by the very same firm that he was found guilty of overbilling? Yeah, but weren't those Hillary Clinton's actual overbilling records? Yeah, let's not talk about that. No, we don't want to be reminded of how fetid, how sordid, and how perverse our system was. We had the birthing of the GMO monocrop agriculture that threatened our food security. We had Clinton's NAFTA and other trade laws resulted in a huge transfer of wealth and economic power from west to east. We had the Glass-Steagall Act and Commodity Future Modernization Act that gutted the protections that had been put in place by FDR during the mid-1930s to protect from savings loan becoming commercial banks and the spinning of the wheel, the roulette of Wall Street, where it made money off money. And even as I said many times, if every single bank on Wall Street collapsed and had to go into bankruptcy today, we would be much better off. If we closed down the Federal Reserve and its 12 regional banks, we would be much better off. If we forgave all interest on the debt that was never paid for by the banks to begin with, it never loaned the money, so why are we giving it money in return? We would be better off. If we forgave all student loans, we'd be better off. But we don't have students who are organized, nor will they be, because they're too much of that selfish generation. A small percentage are conscious of the fact that they're in debt peonage, and that 40% of all student loans right now, 40% within the next 10 years, will be delinquent and therefore will be susceptible to compounding interest rates. So a $30,000 student loan bill will become $80,000, or you go to jail. So wouldn't it make sense to have a general strike where all professors, all students go on strike? you're not going to become any more illiterate than you already are, and it's hard to imagine that you could get any stupider than you are by going to college, but most people shouldn't be in college. College is one more, unless you're one of those very gifted people who know the profession you're going in has plenty of jobs when you get out. And those jobs will not be taken away by artificial intelligence, by robotics, or by Visa and everyone else. Then you're walking right into a gauntlet, and you're going to get chewed up. And you're going to be at home, and you're not going to be able to work, and you're not going to want to work. You're going to feel too entitled to work in a box store. And so you're going to sit at your computer all day as if somehow that justifies the debt that someone besides yourself had to sign for, a mother, grandmother, grandparent. Their wages will be attached, and you could be arrested and go to debtor's prison. But we don't have debtor's prisons. Oh, yes, we do. And we have asset forfeiture. We have a lot of things we shouldn't have, all because people realized that we weren't in enough pain yet to change, to protest, to risk. Unraveling of the American ecology and environmental groups, co-opting them. I'm going to ask Jesse, our engineer, and I'm going to ask Tanya to put up on PRN's website part one and part two of my Earth Day lecture at the UN, where I was invited to be the keynote speaker at the United Nations on Earth Day. I want people to see this. It's about 22 minutes. But boy, do I excoriate the entire environmental movement. And that's everyone who's in the room. I thought they were going to stand up and boo and throw a chair at me. But they didn't. Listen to how they respond. When I'm calling them out, I'm reading articles about how their groups have received money from polluters, hundreds of millions of dollars, and then they never touch that issue, as if we don't have to worry about global warming, or don't have to worry about the pollution of our oceans, don't have to worry about hydrofracking, or because someone got money. Our entire environmental movement, all of it, every single group has to be walked away from, and we have to start new grassroots movements because we have been co-opted. I knew that the environmental movement was dead when I saw in one of the Time or one of these magazines, Al Gore playing football with the heads of the environmental movement on his lawn. And that was it. It was over. You know, they had surrendered just so they could get in the White House and have their photo ops and say that they were friends, with the vice president, the president. This utter negligence in rebuilding our collapsing infrastructure. Do you think our cities collapsed overnight? They did not. And some cities are third world, and rural America is largely impoverished. Today, the elite has succeeded in taking advantage of all these above trends and rewrote the rules that use to govern their behavior. And Al Gore, in my personal opinion, is perhaps the best example of patrician politician. If you don't know what a patrician is, go back and read Roman history, who once seemed devoted to public service, but instead became part of the global super rich. And yeah, he wants to save the environment if you invest or buy from his solar company or invest in his $7 billion hedge fund. Well, Al, I think it'd be a good idea if you went on a really healthy vegan diet, cleansed and detoxified, turned your place down in Tennessee into a vegan hydroponic aquaculture and herbal farm, creating sustainable heirloom seeds to give to communities around the world. You have the money to do it. You could give hundreds of billions of seeds away for free. You have the resources. You made $500 million in just one deal with Al Jazeera. So you can afford to be generous. And please stop this whole idea that you fly coach and carrying your bags through the airport. I mean, we've seen several documentaries, and you keep emphasizing you're a man of the people. Really? Well, could have fooled me. But then again, some of us want to know the truth about who the person is. Oh, and by the way, I was informed that Matt Damon, who I spoke highly of, and I think he's, and I will stand by that he has done some good things. I'm going to ask Matt Damon if he's listening or someone who knows him. Matt, when you were doing your original work, did you make sure you gave proper credit to the person whose original idea it was for Good Will Hunting? That person reached out to me yesterday. I'd like to see that Whatever wasn't done is done to heal that. Now, I want to go a little further with this, and I'll play the segment of Benny tomorrow if I don't have time. But the African Union is 55 nations. It's demanded an apology from Trump, which he has not given, and I don't believe he will. Instead, he'll just lie. The countries Trump mentioned at his meeting of GOP and Democrats that gave rise to his frustration and crass, vulgar statement about them being S-holes, well, they are all part of what is known as temporary protected status, TPS. They're El Salvador, Haiti, Honduras, Nepal, Nicaragua, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, Yemen, and Syria. Now, nine of these countries, nine of the ten, can attribute their temporary protected status to direct U.S. foreign toxic policy. Only Nepal has not been a victim of U.S. foreign policy. It's more of a pawn between India and China in their tensions, and its humanitarian crisis primarily due to earthquakes hitting the nation since 2015. The real list should include dozens of countries ravaged by American economic and military vandalism. Trump blurted out something to the effect, what do we want Haitians here for? Why do we want all these people from Africa here? Why are all these people from these S-hole countries coming here? He then capped his racist view of the world by adding, we should have more people from places like Norway. You think? For the Central American countries, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, you should know the real story. They are S-holes in their environment today because the United States-backed wars and propping up dictators over several decades. Let me give you examples. And this is specifically a history lesson in more than two syllables for the people in the administration. Over 200,000 innocent people were killed in these countries directly due to the United States, our State Department, our CIA. Through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, we trained right-wing death squads and flooded these countries with weapons to fight left-wing politicians, freedom movements, labor unions and organizers, farming peasants, even killing and raping priests and nuns. The U.S. even parried Honduras against Nicaragua, the Sandinistas being in Nicaragua and U.S. training of Contra death squads in Honduras. Also, the Koch kitchens and labs to help fund the right-wing Nicaraguan Contras were in Honduras. 250,000 Salvadoran immigrants live in the United States. Trump wants to send them back to their... What exactly would you send them back to? These are gang-ridden countries. One of the most dangerous countries on earth is El Salvador. You want to send back to where the MS-13 gangs originate? You want to send back to Honduras, where we, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, our State Department, and CIA exercised a coup to take out a democratically elected president? You want to send them to Nicaragua? What exactly do you think would await them when they got home? What kind of moral character does it take to condemn someone who has been here working, paying taxes, living peacefully, and say they don't belong? What kind of inhumanity is behind that facade? And yet the United States has backed with full support Papa Doc Duvalier and Baby Doc Duvalier and repeated U.S. military interventions when socialist populist leaders emerged to challenge the American ruling puppets. Look at Sudan and the South Sudan. The break of the country in 2011 and 12, largely due to the United States and its European allies, foreign policies, going back to guess who? You guessed it, Bill and Hillary Clinton. And look at how the U.S. wrecked Sudan's regional economies and also very radical, racial, and religiously motivated, siding with the Sudanese Christians in the south against the more powerful Muslim regions in the north. Look at Somalia. First invaded by the United States forces under Bill Clinton in the 1990s and later sucked into a war on terror and the victim of conditional naval, air force, and drone strikes. Somalia has been under the rule of U.S. destabilization for 30 years, beginning again with Bill and Hillary Clinton. And then you have Yemen and Syria. Listing these two as assholes really shows Trump's and his supporters' demented worldview. Direct Syrian and indirect Yemen U.S. intervention in these countries have caused millions to be killed, wounded, starved, and forced to flee as refugees. Syria represented a threat to nobody. It was considered the breadbasket, stable, multicultural, and multi-religious. Syria was a rather developed nation before the U.S. spurred its phony Arab Spring and took on the task of ousting Assad. Today, Syria is a pile of rubble. And Libya is not just a pile of rubble, but today more than 1 million people fleeing other parts of Africa, including Niger, are stuck in Libya and are being sold and auctioned as slaves. And yet, have you had a single person from CNN or Time or any of the major media go to Libya, go to the markets, film them in the marketplace, show these poor, destitute people, show the rubble of war, show that the entire country is destroyed, and say, Obama and Clinton and Rice, this is your war. You took credit for destroying Libya and Gaddafi. What did you think it would become? It was the most stable country in Africa, the wealthiest country in Africa, the most educated per population in Africa, higher level of education than in the United States, longest lifespan in Africa, longer than the average American lifespan, no debt. They had multiple religions that were allowed. They had no terrorism. And it was safe to walk. You could walk the streets of Libya any time, day or night, without being in any way adversely affected. Women had more rights in Libya than any other Muslim nation. And so exactly what was the threat? It was the golden ear. It was the fact that the African League was wanting to work with Gaddafi to make all of their commerce backed by the golden ear that they controlled, not the U.S. dollar and the hegemony of that dollar. So they ousted him. So why don't we hold the people who created the mess in Libya and Syria and Yemen? Why don't we hold them accountable? Why are there no exposés? Why there's no even interview of showing, hey, Ms. Clinton, here's a video we just filmed all over Libya. And here's a video that we found of Libya 2 years before the invasion. Do you take any responsibility for what you created here? She, of course, as she always does, her and her husband, they would get out of it. Then go down and take them down to Haiti and say, what happened to the $13 billion that came to Haiti? And your husband, by the UN, was not just a rapporteur, but he was the head of the mission in Haiti, relief mission, as she was also choosing the people who would get the money. And why is it only your close colleagues and friends and people that gave to you and the Clinton Foundation received all these contracts, no bid contracts? Where's the money? We'd like to see an audit. The Haitians got less than 1%. The country is still as it was principally, except for the good work of some of the responsible NGOs, but the rest is not. But no one will ask her that, because you don't ask the people who are the head of a paradigm that you're benefiting from the hard questions. You don't ask the head of a medical industrial complex, why are we still doing this medical procedure when it's shown not only to be of no value, mammograms, but actually cause cancer? Why are we still using chemotherapy on colorectal cancer when there's no study showing that it really benefits? So everyone stays silent. So when you look at Syria and you look at Yemen and you look at the cholera epidemic in Yemen, which is the largest in the world today, it's a hell on earth due to our unconditional support of Saudi Arabia and completely demented regime, the most toxic viral regime in the world. It spreads its toxic Wahhabi religion, which is an afterthought of Sunnism, in these madrasas, and has more of these teaching schools around the Middle East than any other place in the world. So they're breeding one new set of extremists after another. Why isn't any of this checked? Why isn't their participation in Line 11? Why aren't they being challenged on this? Why are we still doing business with them? Because of money, because of manufacturers, because of the big people? Yemen is clearly evidence of American genocide in partnership with Wahhabi friends in Saudi Arabia. So when you decide that these are all S-holes, why don't you take a look at the difference between an environment that is despicably bad on every level and cannot sustain life versus the quality of the people, the human souls that inhabit that through no fault of their own, but through the fault of the people that you have in your cabinet, the people that you befriend, the people in our military-industrial complex, the people in your State Department and your CIA and Homeland Security and National Security Agency, the people on Wall Street, the people in the Fortune 500, the people on the Council on Foreign Relations. And then when you add those factors into why these countries are, quote, S-holes, then we should have a big, giant, gigantic, the biggest you could make, sign as you enter every country. This is a U.S.-created asshole country. The people are good, the rulers are corrupt, and we caused it all. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening, and have a nice day. And remember, this coming Sunday night, 7:30, the most powerful webinar you have ever heard will be on deadly deception with a panelist from around the world, some great minds. It'll be a riveting 3 to 4 hours. Go to GaryNall.com or PRN.FM and sign in, and then you'll be getting instructions how to tune in. You won't want to miss this. It starts at 7:30 this coming Sunday evening. Join me at that time. Have a nice day, everyone.